can you believe that it's another year that we're actually able to meet together? We've survived COVID. We've survived all these things that are going on. But and now we're in Easter again. And this is an Easter we can actually go out and enjoy things. And I'm glad to see that some of you have decided to come here and actually celebrate his resurrection together with us. But what does Easter mean to you? I love the fact that Tony started off by wishing us all a happy Christmas. I mean, isn't that wonderful? But what does Easter mean to you? I mean, what do you think of when you think of Easter? We just got sent pictures from my kids in Southern Ireland, in Ireland, and they've gone on an Easter egg hunt, and they've done a whole lot of things, and they hide Easter eggs all around the house. So what do you think of when you think of Easter? Do you think of Easter eggs? Do you think of all these things? Or if you happen to be a religious person or a devout person, do you remember that this is the day that Christ rose from the dead? This is the day that we celebrate the fact. I mean, the only reason we are meeting here today is because he rose from the dead. You know, if he had gone to the cross and died, we would not be meeting here today. But if he went to the cross and died and then rose again, we're meeting today. So the resurrection is the reason we celebrate. And it's interesting, Jesus met with the disciples for the very first time on a Sunday evening, when after he had risen from the dead, if you remember, he saw Mary and them at the tomb, and then left, and then he was on the road to Emmaus with a couple. But he met with the disciples in the evening, and if you remember, Thomas didn't get to see it, and he had to wait. He didn't then wait to meet with them the next day. He had to wait a whole week till the next Sunday, and then met with them on a Sunday again, and then they had to wait for the 50 days until Pentecost came around, for when Jesus actually came back and actually gave the Holy Spirit. And Pentecost always falls on a Sunday. So God's given us a day when we can celebrate his resurrection. It's not a Sabbath. It's not a sort of a law thing to us. It's a day of celebration. It's a day when we can commemorate who we are in Christ. And so having looked at that, I went on a total sidetrack of what I actually had down. But we actually celebrating Easter. And if you look in the Bible, the four Gospels were given. Now, in those four Gospels, if you were to look at how much time each of the writers allocates to the last week of Jesus' life, you'd be quite surprised. In Matthew, I think it's around about chapter 20 or 21 that he starts talking about Jesus right up until 28. So all of them, the last period of Jesus' life is actually the greatest part that they actually put in. I mean, if you take about Jesus' birth, two of the writers spend two chapters on it, and that's it. Mark decides it's only worth a verse. But they all focus on that last week of Jesus, his leading up to Jerusalem, his death, and then his resurrection. John, which is what I want to look at today, John actually he spent half of the book that he wrote on that last week. From about chapter 12, he talks about the going into Jerusalem, and then he has the Last Supper where he talks about this, the washing of the feet and the sermon that Jesus gave, building up to all that. And so they all covered these things. But I want to focus on something that happened. Now, as we're celebrating his resurrection, I actually want to celebrate something on his crucifixion. And it's when Jesus is now, they've had the Last Supper, he did the foot washing, he gave them all the sermon, they then left, went up to the Garden of Gethsemane. And if you remember, Jesus then prayed, and he kept saying, "Pray with me." And then started praying, and everyone fell asleep. And he'd wake them all up and say, "Pray with me." And he'd pray, and they'd all fall asleep. You know, it's the usual sort of situation. I don't know how many of you felt guilty because you'd be praying to God and realized you've actually fallen asleep in the prayer. I've actually done that. So, he then, of course, Judas comes and brings all the soldiers with him. They grab Jesus. They take him off to see the Sanhedrin and the Pharisees. And they actually decide that he needs to be crucified, and they take him to Pontius Pilate. So I want to look at the discussion that happened with Jesus and Pontius Pilate. That's what I want to sort of focus on today. And from in the Gospel of John. So we only one scripture you're going to look at today. So this, you're not going to be turning from scriptures. It's all in one place. John chapter 18. So if you want to turn to John chapter 18, those who have Bibles, or you can probably see it up there. John chapter 18, starting at verse 33. It says, "So Pilate entered his headquarters again and called Jesus and said to him, 'Are you the king of the Jews?' Jesus answered, 'Do you say this of your own accord, or did others say it to you about me?' Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you over to me. What have you done?" And Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting, that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from this world." Then Pilate said to him, "So you are a king?" And Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born. For this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Pilate said to him, "What is truth?" After he had said this, he went back outside to the Jews and told them, "I find no guilt in him. But you have a custom that I should release one man for you at the Passover." And I'm assuming Pilate did this because he thought he was going to release Jesus. And he said, "So do you want me to release to you the King of the Jews?" And the Pharisees then cried out again and said, "Not this man, but Barabbas." Now Barabbas was a, how do you pronounce his name? Barabbas was a robber. And if you go to John 19, verse 1, it says, "Then Pilate took Jesus and flogged him. And the soldiers twisted a crown of thorns and put it on his head and arrayed him in a purple robe. They came up to him and saying, 'Hail, King of the Jews,' and struck him with their hands. Pilate now goes out. He went out again and said to them, 'See, I'm bringing him out to you so that you may know that I find no guilt in him.'" And he then brings Jesus out. Now, I want you to picture, Jesus is now coming out. He's now been beaten. He's been flogged. So he's actually barely walking. He's actually in a very, if you look at what they, how they actually treated him, the flesh has all been torn off his body. He has a crown of thorns crammed onto his head. And he's mockingly wearing a purple robe. And he's brought out before the crowd. And Pilate brings him out, wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. And Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." And the chief priests call for him to be crucified. And in the end, Pilate then realizes that Jesus is innocent and wants to set him free, but he's gone too far. He can't get out of it. And he ends up handing him a cross. But he makes one last statement about Jesus. He first presents him as "Behold the man," and then he presents him later on to be crucified, where he hands him a cross to them to be crucified. If you go down to verse 14 in John 19, it says, "Now it was the day of preparation of the Passover. It was about the sixth hour. And he said to the Jews, 'Behold your king.'" And I actually want to have a look at that. Those two statements that Pilate made. Because Pilate, of course, didn't know the part that he was playing in this. But he was playing a part that God even had ordained for him in this. And he presents Jesus as, "Behold the man and behold your king." And I just want to have a look at briefly at those two things, those two statements. And when we look at Jesus as the man. Now, what man can do something that affects all of us? Do you know there was only one man in history that was able to do that? And funny enough, it wasn't, I'm not looking at Jesus in this, I'm looking at Adam. Now, Adam, now with if you, I want to give you a picture of my granddad. My granddad decided, he was living in the UK, and he decided he was going to move to Africa. So in 1950s, he moved to Africa. And he took his kids with him and everything. My dad was one of the kids he took across with him to Africa. And my dad then got married in Zimbabwe, or in Rhodesia in those days. And I was then born in that country. I want to tell you that I had no choice in that matter. You know that I could not have a say in where I was going to be born. Because my granddad had moved from one country to another, because I came from him, as it were, because my dad came from him and I came from my dad. Because of that, I'm now born in Zimbabwe or Rhodesia. And there's no say I have on that matter. So the only person who could actually do something that would affect all of us is the very first person who was ever created. The very first person who was around, which the Bible tells us was Adam. And of course, he had a wife, Eve. Now, when something happened with Adam, and he then gets cast out of God's sight and thrown into a broken world. What happened to him happened to all of us. We are now part of that broken world. Whether we like it or not, we are now born in this broken world. As a man, he was cast out. Now, what man can actually fix that? Well, I can only normally fix things for, now we move back to the UK. Now, if Jeanette and I decided that we were going to have more children, we're not having more children, but if we decided we were going to have more children, you know that those children would have no choice again. They would have to be born in the UK. Apart from that, the children I've already had, they've already been born in Zimbabwe. They have no effect of what I'm actually doing. So normally a man can only affect the area that we're part of. But you know, God sent someone to come to earth that could actually affect all of us. And the only way he could do that is because he sent the person who created us. The person who was before Adam. If you go through the genealogies, I love the genealogies in Luke and in Matthew. In Matthew, it takes you back to Abraham because he was showing that Jesus was actually part of the line of the Jews. But in Luke, he takes him back to Adam and he says that Adam was begotten from God because God was the father of all of them. So if God came down, he's like the starter of all of us. What he does can affect all of us. And so God actually came to earth and became a man. And he became a man in the person of Jesus. So that was God who can actually do something that can actually affect everyone. But to do that, he had to become a man. And that was the man Jesus. And you know, when he was a man that could relate to all of us. In other words, do you know that he got hungry? Can you believe that God could get hungry? Imagine if you were God and you have everything at your disposal. You now put yourself in a situation where you're trapped in a human body, trapped on a world that you created, and you're now hungry, and you've got to wait for someone to give you food. I mean, how hard that must be. And I was actually thinking about it. Imagine he got hungry, he got thirsty. When his friend died, he grieved because he felt the grief that we feel when one of our family or friends die. Even worse, you know, he was wandering through the wilderness, and after wandering all day in the hot sun, he got smelly. Can you believe that God could actually need a bath? You know, and yet he became a man so that he could experience all of that for us. So that when Pilate says, "Behold the man," we could look and actually see him as a man. He is someone that can relate to me. He is someone that whatever you're going through, he can understand what you're going through, because he has been through it as a man. Later on, Pilate actually then presents him and says, "Behold your king." Now, I love that. And as a matter of fact, he goes on further on. If we'd read on, and again, because of the time, we couldn't do that. But if we'd read on, we could have actually read how he then created a plaque to put on the cross saying, "This is Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews." And everyone came to him and said, "No, no, no, don't say that. Say he claimed to be." And he said, "What I have written, I have written." And of course, that was of God. God actually presents him as your king. And he's not just king of the Jews. "Behold your king." You know, he is king of all of us. And when he went to the cross, he was able to die for us because he was a man. But he was able to die for all of us because he was God. And he was able to offer us something that no one else can offer. He was able to offer us this righteous life. We look at our broken life, and a lot of us have things where our life is broken right now. And we actually realize, and if you go to the modern youngsters and a lot of these conservation things, they're actually telling us that the parents are to blame for the world. As a matter of fact, I listened to a speech of one of them, which I'm sure a lot of us heard, where the person actually said, "You are to blame for this, and I will never forgive you for the world that you've given us." And they're blaming the parents for what actually happened. And I suppose, in a sense, they're right. In that it goes all the way back. But only one person has been able to take all that blame onto himself and free us of that blame. And that is Jesus. Jesus is saying that when he went to the cross, he was prepared to take all that guilt, all that shame, all that blame, whatever's happened in your world that is broken, he's wanting to take that onto himself and to give us his righteousness so that we can be free. Behold the man, and behold your king. And it's interesting that there's a song that came into song, a preach that came out by S.M. Lockridge. I'm sure all of us know it. "That's my king." I was going to play it, but I thought it's been played to death, so I decided not to do that. You know, where he goes through all these scenarios saying, who is Jesus? You know, the Pharisees couldn't stop him. No one could actually do anything to him. And when he went somewhere, it changed. "That's my king. Do you know him?" And that's who we have, is we have Jesus as our king. But is he your king? You know, and it's interesting. Now, I just thought I'd give a little testimony of myself to end with here. Now, I've given my testimony a lot of times here, but I just wanted to give it from a different angle. I came from a totally non-Christian family. I eventually met Jesus when I was at school, but the Jesus I met was someone who could actually help me in my situation. I was at a point where I was probably thinking of suicide. I'd gone through a horrific period of discovering things and that, and I met Jesus, and I realized he was able to help me. And because he was able to help me, he was my king. So the very first thing I ever met was Jesus as, "Behold my king." And for 20-odd years, I worshipped him as my king. And as a matter of fact, I was so in awe of him that the phrases that meant most to me was when it said that, you know, the beginning of knowledge and wisdom is the fear of the Lord. I actually believed we should fear the Lord. I believed we should obey the Lord. I did my best to try and obey everything he did because he was my king. He was the one that could tell me what to do. After I'd been a Christian for about 20 years, through a series of incidents, I actually woke up on a Christmas morning, funny enough, Christmas, on a Christmas morning and heard God say to me, "You're saved by grace." And I felt a bit like Paul, where he had, or Saul, when he had the scales fall from his eyes and he suddenly understood about Jesus. I suddenly understood about Jesus. And whereas up to that point, if I ever referred to Jesus, I would call him Christ or Lord. I would never call him Jesus. That was like a, that would have been like an affront to do that. But I suddenly met him as Jesus. I met him as the man. I met him as someone who can relate to me, someone who cares enough to want to be with me. He's not just my king, he's my friend. He's the one who's prepared to die for me. He's the one who's prepared to give his life for me. He's the one who's prepared to go to the cross just for me. He's the one who's going to be with me and through everything I'm doing. When I have issues that I'm praying for, now a lot of us, you know, when you want to bring up prayers, have you seen in the movies when the when someone's praying to God and they're not Christian, they generally say something along the lines of, "Hi God, it's me. Sorry to interrupt. I know you're busy." And yet, you know, and though that's funny, isn't that often how we think? You know, you've got an issue you want to pray into, but isn't that important? You know, like once we had it where our cat was lost and then we found the cat and it was at the top of this tall tree and we realized that unless someone did something, this cat was not going to live. So we prayed. But I remember thinking, is this an important thing to pray for to God? I mean, you know, how focused is God on my cat that's stuck in a tree when there are things happening like in other countries? But you want to know something? God does care about that because he cares about you. He cares about the hairs you're losing on your head. Now, for some of us, that can be quite a serious thing, but it's a, but you know, he even cares about that. He cares, well, some of us don't really care about the hairs on our head, but anyway, that's, but he cares about the intimate details of you. What you're concerned with, because he loves you, he cares about it. And that is, behold the man. And we need to behold Jesus. When we come to the Easter, we need to behold him in two ways. We need to behold him as our king, but we also need to behold him as the man. We need to behold him as the one that we obey, the one that we that can. He has the power to do everything, but he's also the one that can tell us what to do, and we will lay down everything to do it. But we also need to behold him as the man, the one who loved us, the one who gave himself for us, the one who's there for us. And so I just wanted to leave that with you. So what do you see when you look at Jesus? When we come to Easter, what do you actually see? And we're going to actually celebrate communion now. And I'm going to ask Richard to come up and actually share on that. But in communion, we actually have the meeting of Jesus as king and man, where he presents what he presents in the communion is we actually get to see Jesus and what he did for us. Behold your king.